No one plans for hair loss, but through Hims, you can take the next step with confidence. Access treatments made with clinically proven ingredients like finasteride and minoxidil to stop hair loss and regrow hair in 3 to 6 months. No waiting rooms, no hoops, just ingredients with a track record of results. You shouldn't have to go out of your way to feel like yourself. Hims brings expert care straight to you, with 100% online access to personalized treatments that put your goals first. For simple online access to personalized and affordable care for hair loss, ED, weight loss, and more, visit hims.com/Hail Mary. That's hims.com/Hail Mary for your free online visit. hims.com/Hail Mary. Individual results may vary, based on studies of topical and oral minoxidil and finasteride. Prescription required. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
Championship. Yeah.
We're starting with this.
Okay.
Welcome back, by the way. So we are live now. We're starting with the conversation that we were having right before the show started, and that is on the subject of Badgers basketball, which we're going to start with today. But just the real quick conversation we were having is people caring only about the big tournament. And Mike made a great point, and I'll let him make it again. I won't steal the thunder, but Mike had one very strong point that I think is very valid.
Yeah, so it's crazy, right? Like towards like the end of the year, there's obviously more eyes like collectively and with like the tournaments coming up, starting with the conference.
Sugarcoat it, say what you said.
And the NCAA tournament, and full conclusion, a lot of these fans, quote unquote, the only time that they will watch the Badgers basketball, Badger basketball games or college basketball games in general is when the tournament's around. So if we win one game, but then we lose the next two and the second being the elimination game and we're no longer in the tournament anymore, that to a lot of fans kind of defines like the whole season as a whole. And they want, once again, they want Greg Gard fired. That's another point we're going to touch base on too.
Yep.
But it's unfortunate because a lot of like college, this is for a lot of the sports too, but just from what I see on the outside and in the Twitter sphere, Facebook and whatnot, obviously most of the comments come out really when quote unquote, we lose the big game or the elimination game. And the first thoughts are they want the head coach fired where there's no accountability, you know, and they just don't, that's the only games that they watch throughout the whole year. So it does, you know, it's laughable, honestly, in this case.
Yeah. Very valid point. So we're going to hit the intro and then we're going to talk about the two games and then we're going to talk about where the Badgers go from here.
Yeah, go ahead.
Welcome to another live episode of the Wisco Fanatic Show, where we discuss the Packers, Bucks, Brewers, Badgers football, and basketball from an optimistic perspective. Wisco Fanatics is brought to you by Cardboard Legacy, Wisconsin's most complete sports card shop. Buy, sell, grade, and consign all at their location in Oshkosh.
Alrighty, so we're gonna talk about the Montana and the BYU games. Honestly, I'm fine with us just running through these kind of quickly and then spending a little bit more time talking about the future of the team. So, Mike, start with the guards on the Montana game and just your quick couple takeaways.
Yeah, at least for the guards. It was pretty quiet for the most part. That being said, collectively, it was a very, very balanced attack. So kudos to the Badgers. But I'll start with Max Klusman. Unfortunately, he didn't score in this game, but again, I go back to one of his biggest, you know, contributions, I think, to this team is still being the threat out there, bringing that extra defender. I've talked about it numerous times. He did have 4 assists, leading assist guy for this season. He had 2 rebounds as well, played 23 minutes. So, yeah, like I said, unfortunately, he didn't score. But but we had better matchups with other dudes, I think, overall. And that led to, you know, 5-6 other players getting at least 10 points, if not just about 10 points. So, yeah, he didn't play bad. He was just a threat out there. Unfortunately, he didn't score. But, you know, like I said, creating that threat, setting guys up, you know, not too bad overall. So then going in with Kamari McGee, he got 25 minutes in this game, 4 points, 6 rebounds, 1 assist. As soon as he got in the game, he had a very, very nice reverse layup in transition. I think that kind of got the team going a little bit, starting to get our feet wet in this tournament game. So, unfortunately, no corner threes. in this game. He did go 0-3 from the 3-point line, but he had 6 rebounds, which is pretty damn impressive for
your smallest guy on the floor.
Correct. For your 5'10 guard, might even be smaller. We'll see. Sometimes in the roster, you get that extra inch bump or extra 2 inches. So, but no, 4 points, 6 rebounds, 1 assist. Not wasn't like one of the elite scores, but again, we had other guys that had big days for us that got the job done. So, Jack Janicki didn't really do too much this game. He just got 5 minutes and had 1 assist, but we'll be talking about him in a little while here. He's going to be a big part of this team in the future. And again, it was a balanced attack in this game. We had other guys that had big, big days for us. And looking forward to hearing from you guys in terms of what our other guys did in this game.
So you brought up balanced scoring. John Blackwell had 19 points on 7 of 9 shooting from the two point range. 5 rebounds, 3 assists, 2 turnovers, 2 steals. Not bad at all. John Tonje got a 4-point play to open up his scoring. He made 2 of his 4 threes. Both of them were in the first half. And those were his only 2 field goals. He missed a dunk, but probably should have been a foul. Wasn't called a foul, but it is what it is. But John Tonje was 9 for 9 at the free throw line. That was one of my biggest takeaways from the game. 15 points, 4 rebounds, an assist, and 2 turnovers. I'll let Jake talk about the bigs, and then I'll just give my 2 quick takeaways.
Yeah, so Stephen Crowell was fantastic, 18 points, 4 rebounds, 2 assists. He was 8 of 10 from the field, 2 of 5 from 3, so he was ultra-aggressive in this one. Nolan Winter also had 10 points, 6 rebounds and an assist, 4 of 6, 1 of 2 downtown. Gilmore, 8 points, 6 rebounds, 1 assist, 3 of 6, 1 of 4. He was the only big man that played that didn't score in double figures. I believe there was 6 guys that scored double figures, right? Or 7.
Sounds right.
Yeah.
You can fact check me on that, but 3 of them came from the big man section, which is what I was covering this season. Amos had 11, 4, and 0, 5 of 9 from the field, 104 from downtown. They had 47 points total out of the big man, 20 rebounds, 4 assists. They were 20 of 31 from the field. They made 20 of the 31 shots that the Badgers made versus Montana. Montana was really pushing up. Obviously, the word was going around town, around the country, that the Badgers shoot a lot of threes. They make a lot of threes, right? So Montana was pushing up, and the Badgers were playing smart, just taking what was given to them. They had the size advantage over Montana. We talked about that last week. So did a nice job finding that and going to the lane and finishing. And they didn't turn the ball over too much in this one, but they had 14 assists. That's not too bad either. Still got to the line 20 times as well, so that's a good sign. The Badgers overall played really, really good in this game. Stephen Crowell was fantastic.
So you mentioned the Wisconsin being bigger, knowing they had the size advantage. Neither team had any fast break points.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Which is kind of weird, but you think about it. Wisconsin, they played a little bit slower knowing they had the size advantage. Mm-hmm. You know, being a little more confident they could score in the half court with the bigs. And then as far as Montana is concerned, I want to give the Badgers credit again for doing really well getting back on defense.
Yeah.
Other than that, this 19-point win was the 4th highest margin of victory in Wisconsin tournament history. So love to see that. And then they held Montana's leading scorer, Money Williams, to 2 for 8 from the field and only 8 points. So good job there as well. Any other takeaways you guys have from this game before we go to BYU?
No, business per usual.
All right, let's talk about the BYU game. Mike, I'll go to you first again. Hit me with your thoughts from this one.
Yeah, this was obviously a little bitter at the end of the day. I mean, when you give up 91 points against a team, that's definitely going to be hard to beat. BYU, first and foremost, I mean, they're a great team. When you shoot 12 of 26 from 3, 46%, that you're not going to beat anybody. Damn, you're pretty much not going to beat anybody. And if you are going to beat them, you got to play a freaking perfect game. So it's tough to do that when I will say this, you're on the road, when it's a legitimate road tournament game for that matter. I don't want to bring that up as a complete excuse as to why we lost this game. I am going to say that I do believe this was a legitimate road game, and the NCAA definitely did not do the Badgers any favors with this seating at all. That being said, you give up 12 of 26 from 3, 15 of 16 from the free throw line for BYU.
Can I just jump in on that?
Yeah.
Because they shot 15 of 16 at the free throw line. It was 94%. Yeah. They averaged 74.
Yeah.
And their 3-point shooting, that 12 of 26 was 46%. They averaged 37. So they shot 10% over their 3-point average and 20% over their free throw average and won by 2.
Mm-hmm.
With a chance for a game tying shot at the end.
Yeah. Or game winning.
Or a game winning. Yeah. We can talk about that scenario. But I'll start with Max Klesmit. You know, he played 27 minutes. He did give us 12 points, 4 of 9 from three. He definitely had a better second half, I think, than first half, at least in my view. 3 rebounds, 2 assists, did have 2 turnovers. We talked about this numerous times in the chat. Defensively, he did look 1 to 2 steps slow. There's a couple times where I thought he was in freaking quicksand with how he was playing D, unfortunately. And I don't know if that was kind of like a schematic thing with what we were trying to do, but it just really, it might be a play style, the play style of BYU was trying to do to us as well at the same time. But there's definitely times where he did get exposed. But I do appreciate his efforts, you know, at the end of the day, again, with clutching up and making those threes for us in the second half to keep us somewhat afloat, because if he doesn't make any of those threes and John Tanjay isn't All-American John Tanjay, we might get ran out of the gym against these dudes by 20 plus. So, Klez at the end of the day, his offensive input, he was part of the reason why we were still in this. So kudos to him. I do think maybe at the end of the day, his injury might have came back a little bit.
That's kind of what I was thinking, was maybe the ankle was bothering him.
Yeah, I don't think he was 100%, but – play a team against BYU, top 25 team. You know, this is March. Again, playing on the road, home game for him. I don't know. Maybe it just got to him a little bit, but kudos to Max Klesmit on a great year. We'll go over the seniors.
Yeah, again. We'll talk about the seniors in a little bit.
And then Kamari McGee, not his best night, unfortunately. He got only 14 minutes, 2 rebounds, 1 turnover, 0 of 3. Jake made an outstanding point during the chat. I think the lights were a little too big for him in the moment at the time. He missed a couple point blank layups that were gimmies. Yeah. And it looked like he also did get sped up a little bit in certain situations, that being one of them, but even a little defensively as well. But I mean, this doesn't take away from what he's done the entire year. I mean, this was a team loss, you know, at the end of the day. So there's other guys that we might call out here in a little bit, but Jack Janicki, 7 minutes, 1 rebound, didn't play too much. Obviously going to be a big part of what we do next year, but he clutched up for us in a handful of games this season and saved our ass, I think, a few times. I mean, you think about him, you think about the Purdue game for sure. I would say kept us afloat against the Michigan State. I don't know. We'll talk about all that other stuff, but no, that's about it for me. Great season for Klez. I mean, it could have been better, but honestly, we're going to miss him next year. Yeah. Cam, we're definitely going to miss. It's tough way to go out for sure. Especially at the end of the day, when we did have a chance to tie or even potentially win. I still think it was a great year, but we'll talk.
Reggie said BYU should be embarrassed that they allowed us back in the game. We looked rough at first and said Tanjay is a beast, though. He absolutely is. This was a win or go home type game, so you can never take your foot off the gas. And I don't think the Badgers did, and obviously BYU didn't either, and that's why this ended up being a 91-89 final score. Yeah. And John Blackwell, he played decent. He was 6 of 14 from the field, 3 of 7 on threes, 3 of 7 on twos, which is kind of rough. 6 of 7 from the free throw line, finished with 21 points, 6 rebounds, 3 assists, and 0 turnovers, which is great. But you mentioned the BYU free throw shooting, 15 of 16. The Badgers were 23 of 29. That's 79.3%. That's 3% below their season average. Not a crazy amount, but they missed the front end of 1-and-1s twice, which takes away the opportunity to get 2 more free throws on a season where you're shooting 82.6%. You just got to knock those down. Obviously,
the reason why we won a lot of games this year.
It really is, and it's why I trust the Badgers way more this season in the late game situations, and it's why you can play the foul game when you're up by 3 points. You can play the foul game instead of having to just concede a three and hope they don't make it. So that was a big deal for them. And then they shot 12 of 35 on threes. That's 34.3%. They averaged 34.8. So it's not to me that the Badgers so much lost this game as BYU won it. Because like I said, they were 20% over their average on free throws and 10% over their average on three-pointers. That said, John Tanjay wasn't hitting his threes early in the game, but he was working his ass off getting to the rim. And he brought Wisconsin all the way back to have a chance to tie. He just didn't have one last bucket in him. And I understand not liking the shot because he missed it. If he makes it, nobody complains about the shot. But I won't lie, I'd be okay with him taking a three in that situation.
I thought he was going to pull it. I thought the defender gave him a lot of space at the top of the key. At first, when you watch it back, I thought he was going to pull it. I thought he had the space to do it if need be. I was so anxious. I wanted him to put that up personally.
My initial thought, honestly, was I thought guard was going to have him shoot it early for a chance for an offensive rebound.
I could see that too.
When that guy backed up off the top of the key, I was like, oh, dude, he's going to pull this. If he makes it, like, oh, my God, he's a folk hero forever, right?
It's March, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And if he misses it and then you get a tip in, I mean, then you get an opportunity for Winter or Crowell, you know, to be, you know, folk heroes, or they get fouled or something like that. That's what I thought the game plan was going to be. You know what? I'm not mad at the shot because John Tanjay is a monster, and he made an incredible layup trying to get us back into this game. Yeah. I want to point that play out because that was incredible body control.
Yeah. It was basically with him having – he had fucking 37 points.
He was hooping, bro.
I saw people complaining like, oh, Greg Gard should have drawn up a better play. John Tanjay has 37 points. Give him the ball and let him do what he wants.
John Tanjay's the play. He's the
get play. Give him the ball and get out of the way. That's the play.
Yes.
Again, I think the complaining is only coming because he missed the shot. If he makes the shot, there's no complaining. Yep. And like I said, with it being a winner-go-home game, I would have been fine with him shooting a three and saying – we win or you win on this shot, not let's play five more minutes.
It's the only thing I would have changed. I wish he would have put up the three.
Yeah.
But again,
And he did it against Michigan in the conference tournament too. So like, fucking let it fly, dude.
Yeah.
I would have been okay with it. Again, I'm okay with any shot from Tanjay because again, he was 37 points. He was 10 of 18 from the field, 3 of 9 from the 3-point line, and 14 of 16 from the free throw line. I think that's where I lean. That's what he was doing. Because even when you mentioned the defender backing up a little bit, if he sees that his defender's kind of on his heels, you can go at him and, you know, maybe get a shot, get fouled, maybe get an and one and get a 3-point play that way. So like, I can see both, you know, both thoughts of it. And again, put the ball in Tanjay's hands and let him do what he wants.
It's a good point on the and one. Cause to get to 89, he got an and one and a free throw to get us from 86 to 89. So that's a really good point. Maybe he saw the same opportunity and he was like, there's my opportunity to get to the rim. And, you know, it closed up a little bit quicker. Credit to BYU on that play, too. They defended it a little bit better. So it is what it is, man. You live with the results.
My other thing, I'll let Jake talk about the bigs before I say my last thing, but offensive rebounds. So the Badgers allowed 6 offensive rebounds and 12 second chance points in the first half. They did clean that up. Only 3 offensive rebounds in the second half and only 2 second chance points. And overall, the Badgers matched it. They also had 9 offensive rebounds and 14 second chance points. So they did cancel that out. So while it was a problem, I'm not going to say that was the reason that the Badgers lost either.
Yeah. So I'm just going to jump in right here.
Yep.
There's 2 polarizing things that happened during this game. One in the first half, one in the second half. One was when Crowell played a decent game.
Yeah.
When he took that jumper at the end of the half and it ended up being a BYU 3-pointer, that was a big thing.
That was my last point.
Mm-hmm. Oh, sorry.
No, you're good because that's why I left it for you because you're the big man.
I didn't even like put this into consideration as a momentum swing, but the missing the front end of ones-on-ones in college, it's just so massive. So that could be added to the list as a third thing. And then the other thing that happened was that mysterious technical foul on the Badgers bench.
Mysterious.
That completely,
mysterious.
Completely took all momentum from the Badgers when they were, you know, the Badgers got punched in the mouth. I'm going to call it what it is. BYU punches in the mouth.
Yep.
But the Badgers have shown resilience this year. They're a senior-led team. They've been in a lot of big-time games. They've taken a lot of big-time shots. They lost big-time games.
Yep.
But you don't learn unless you lose.
Yeah.
You learn from losing. So let that be a life lesson for everybody there. And for the Badgers to grab this game and kind of take control, it felt like they were in cruise control at that point, to be completely honest with you.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden, this mysterious technical foul happens, and it feels like BYU and their fans got some life out of it.
For them to call that on something that has not been called the entire season is wild to call in an NCAA tournament game.
And then, you know, they kicked that BYU kid out for elbowing Klesmet, which they should have.
Which they should have, yep.
And because, you know, we saw Kamari McGee get kicked out for way less. I don't want to hear – I'm not going to feel bad for you because I've seen my point guard get thrown out for way less just going around a screen.
Yep, for going around a screen.
And then on top of that, that freaking kid who – the 6'6 point guard, you know, John Blackwell is going to just pressure the ball and he's allowed to just forearm shove him.
Yep,
shove him. Why are we getting nothing for that? Why is the ref just stepping in and acting like this is his two toddlers fighting or something?
Yeah.
You got to tee him up. John Blackwell allows that space.
Dead ball foul. Like, it's got to be something.
Blackwell has allowed that space.
Yep.
Now, if he goes over the line, you know, when he's trying to pressure the ball and he goes over the line, that's when you step in and be like, hey, John, you got to back up. Like, 25, whatever you want to call him. 25, you got to back up. But he's allowed to step up like that.
Yep.
BYU's player is not allowed to just forearm shiver our guy. That's what's not allowed in the rules. Yep. So there were
We're going to call a technical foul for the assistant coaches standing up.
Yeah,
There was no explanation given to guard about that either.
That's all he said was his. It was his understanding that the assistant coaches standing up during, I think it was during that actual thing that you just brought up, the Blackwell getting pushed.
Yeah,
I think it was something. It was during a quote unquote scuffle that the assistant coaches standing up on the bench got them that technical foul.
Well, that's just ridiculous, in my opinion.
If something that they did not call the entire regular season.
Yeah, that's too much. Those are just some of the points that I saw. So on top of the Badgers playing a de facto road game, playing as a really good six seed BYU, they're better than a six seed, in my opinion.
Yeah, they're a good team. We knew we knew the Badgers had it tough, whether VCU or BYU won.
Yeah, they didn't lose to a bad team, that's why I'm not upset about it. If they would have lost to Montana, I'd probably be having a different tone right now.
That would be much different situation.
Losing to BYU in a de facto road game, then you have all this other mysterious stuff just happening, like.
And a couple situations, like you brought up the front end of the one-on-ones and you brought up the Crowell forcing a shot. Like, I get that he had a somewhat smaller defender on him, but that was a contested shot with like 6 seconds on the shot clock or on the game.
Yeah. Clock shot. The first half. Yeah.
Like, and you know that. Oh, that's a 5 or 6 point swing.
Yeah.
Five points.
It's five if he makes it, but like if he turns around and kicks it out to somebody and they make a three, like that's a potential 6 point swing.
And you don't feel the same about the Crowell shot that you do about the John Tanjay shot at the end of the game because, you were getting punched in the mouth in the first half, like I said.
Yeah.
So at that point, you're kind of just playing against the clock, just trying to make it into halftime, whatever the lead is for them.
The lead to single digits because that three that they hit pushed the lead back to 11. They could have had it down to 5 or 6, and it was pushed back up to 11.
Yeah, so, I mean, that changed the game immensely right there, but – Crowell overall, 10 points, 5 rebounds, and an assist. Winter had 6 points, 4 rebounds, and an assist. The lights looked a little bright for him, too, if I'm going to be completely honest with you.
Yeah.
BYU was coming with speed, and Nolan Winter did not handle it very well, in my opinion. Gilmore, 3 points, got it at was the only 3 points off the bench. The depth was not there.
Yeah.
He was 1 for 3, 0 for 1 from 3. Amos only played 6 minutes and put up 3 shots, 0 for 2 from 3. So comparing it to the Montana game, which is tough to do because the level of competition and all that, I get it. Yeah. Badgers bigs had 47 points versus Montana, and they had 19 points versus BYU. So, I mean, it's a tough pill to swallow. They didn't shoot as efficiently, obviously, 39% compared to 65%, 20% from 3 compared to 38% from 3. So, I mean – there's a lot of things that went into it. BYU did a nice job extending their defense and also protecting the paint. They did a nice that they did a nice job rotating on defense to the ball side, I thought. So, you know, it is what it is. We're going to get in some extracurricular stuff with the Badgers right now, but it was a fun year. I'll say that.
It definitely was a fun year. We're going to each talk about the seniors in our groups here, but overall, I don't think that there's any reason to be like calling for Greg Gard's job or, you know, saying we did like a program overhaul or anything like that. Like, we can go through the seniors first, but I have three big things on the team as a whole after that. So let's just start with the seniors. Mike, I'll let you go first and talk about the senior guards.
Yeah. So I think I'm kind of going forward. I think one of the biggest things that Wisconsin is going to look for in the portal is going to be the culture. I think that is a vital, vital piece into this whole thing. And yeah, just transitioning it into the guards, right? Who am I going to bring up? The two intrastate guys that absolutely take the most pride, I think you could say, arguably out of, you know, damn near anyone on the team. You're talking about two guys transferring in that, yes, they did not get initial looks into Wisconsin, but, you know, eventually they come in, they stay here for 3 years, they put in a shit ton of work. Max Klesman, 3-year starter. Kamari McGee works his ass off for 2 years into the program before he gets legitimate minutes. These are two guys that absolutely love the state of Wisconsin. So, you know, Klez, for the most part of his career, until he got hurt a little bit, he was a defensive guy. He was the guy that would always get in your face, but always would not mind talking shit to players too at the same time, because, you know, he, for the most part, he could back it up, and he doesn't care. Maybe once in a while he makes a mistake or two, but he's still going to bring that mentality every single day. And get right in your face, and he's going to hit some threes. He hit some big time shots for us in years past. When I think of Max Klesman offensive wise, you think of Marquette twice. He basically carried us in both of those games. One time we did win, one time we did lose, but he kind of single-handedly carried us with his shooting performance.
I always think of the 2022 game against Michigan when he hit that late mid-range.
Yeah.
That's the one that I always think of.
I think of Indiana as well. Not this season, but the season before. I think it was a game literally after Marquette when he was just on a heater. Like a 5-6 game, I think it was like 3 or 4 game streak or whatever, and he was just going off. But point blank being, Klez is going to go down as a Badger legend still. Nina Rocket alum. You know, I'm hoping he can get an overseas career for a while, I guess, until he comes back to the States. And
following Brad Davison's footsteps.
Yeah, exactly. So kudos to Klez. Had a hell of a career here at Wisconsin. And then, yeah, going to Kamari McGee. I think you could. I know we, you know, we obviously got John Tanjay, we got, you know, John Blackwell. I think I think you could argue the biggest improvement from season to season, the guys on the Badger roster. I think you got to put Kamari McGee in that conversation.
Yeah.
In terms of obviously his shooting, his physicality, his physicality was unreal. The dude, like, he looks like his arms were freaking like tree trunks, man. Like it was crazy. The amount of time he put in on his body, I think it's night and day in comparison to his two seasons prior with the team, what he looked like. And again, going back to, you know, kind of both of these guys and embracing the Wisconsin culture, taking that pride in playing for your state, I think that's going to be the toughest part as we head into this portal offseason, finding those right guys that are going to be that fit, that are going to embrace the Wisconsin culture, play for the state, and, you know, just, you know, and not just for, you know, the number on your back, but for, you know, for the whatever's written on the front of your jersey. Like, that's going to be the hardest part, I think, when losing these guys.
Yeah, and looking at John Tanjay, who was only here for one season, but I have a one-sentence statement to sum up how I feel about him, and it's best Badgers transfer ever.
No, yeah, no, no argument.
100%.
If you look at his single season numbers and where they rank in Badgers history, in points, second, three-pointers made, third, free throws made, first, free throw percentage, first, most points in a tournament game was the 37 that he had against BYU. He averaged 25.1 points against ranked teams. He averaged 26 points against top 10 teams. He had 15 20-plus games, and he had six games of 30-plus. And obviously, he had the 40-point game against Arizona, which was an early legacy game for John Tonje. I wish we could have him for another year, but he was awesome this season. And, you know, 20 years from now, when we're talking about some of our favorite Badgers players, and, you know, we're going to have the one-hit wonder conversations, John Tonje is going to be at the top of the list.
100%.
Short
of Kaminsky for, I think, 8 to 10 points short for like single season for points.
To Kaminsky, but I think it was by like 17 points.
17. Okay. Okay.
Because I think Kaminsky's was 741.
Okay.
And Tanje had 724.
Yep. Okay. Cool.
And then I did write down just a small blurb about Marcus Silver, because when he played, he was more of a wing than a big, and Jake's got two bigs to talk about. So, yeah. Marcus Silver didn't really become the rotational guy that I thought and hoped he could be, partially due to Carter Gilmore's emergence as a three-point shooter. I still give him props for sticking around, which is more than can be said for other guys. And not just, you know, guys that transferred out of Wisconsin, but just the college landscape in general being the way that it is. For Marcus Silver to stick it out, you know, I understand he didn't get a ton of playing time, but I still respect him for sticking it out.
Yeah, I agree. So I will say about that Tanje 40-pointer against Arizona, all the people that are calling for Greg Gard to be fired, they didn't get to watch that game because that was too early in the season for them to tune in to the Badgers. Since that happened in November, they play games in November, just so everybody can know. You could watch them in November. I had to say it three times so you understand. I wrote down, how will I remember, ... And then I wrote some little nice things here. I'm going to start with Stephen Crowell, because I want to, and I love Gilmore more. So I want to end on Gilmore.
I love it.
So Stephen Crowell came in. He was a good recruit, coming from the pipeline of Minnesota. So everybody in Badgerland was like, yeah, he's going to be good. Coming from Minnesota, a big giant white kid from Minnesota. Yeah, the Badgers are going to make him good. He's a kid he's a nice kid. That's the first thing I'm going to say. He's a nice guy. That's what everybody says about me. Minnesota nice, the Midwest nice. He's a nice kid. But I feel like that's almost to a fault, because it transitions onto the court a little bit. He does have good size. He does have really good footwork. We've plenty of times over his career have said how good of a passer he is, how good of a playmaker he is. His basketball IQ really shows up on that side. I want to say that he's a good competitor, because he tried his ass off. There was games where he looked like he was fighting for his life a few times against Zach Edey, dude. Last couple of years, mm-hmm. It was like he's trying his ass off, dude. I mean, Zach Edey's just a monstrous human being, a behemoth, as some would say. So I want to thank Stephen Crowell, another guy. You know, I'm gonna, you know, sound redundant here. He could have transferred out too after last year. He probably could have got paid a little bit to go to a bigger mid major, maybe a Big East team or something like that. And he could have probably got paid by somebody and been a pretty good player over there as well. But he stuck it out, stayed in Wisconsin, and I appreciate him for that. Now Carter Gilmore. First thing I wrote down about Carter Gilmore is the reason that fans love him is because you feel like he loves the Wisconsin Badgers as much as you do. And I really felt that every time I was watching this guy play, and he'd make a three-pointer, and he's throwing up them threes, you know what I mean? And, you know, he has the big smile on his face, and I'm like, yeah, dude, that guy's loving life right now. I mean, he's making me enjoy my life, and I love that he loves this, and I was just so happy for him. I cannot believe that he turned into the shooter that he was this year. That's incredible to me.
Yeah.
And I agree with Mike that Kamari McGee is probably the most improved player overall, but behind him is Gilmore.
Sure.
I wrote down one of the most improved players on this team. Incredible touch from the outside. Came in as a defender, left as a known as a gritty fan favorite. That's what I wrote down. Gritty fan favorite. we're going to, you know, Tyler and I, we've had these discussions before about our favorite players on teams. We've done cool series on jersey numbers and favorite players. I got to tell you, man, Carter Gilmore will always hold a special place in my heart because he's just one of those guys that is going to be forgotten about, kind of like an Ersan Ilyasova for the Bucks or Charlie Villanueva, that which we've had lots of discussions on. Yeah. Gilmore is in that section of players for me of people that don't get enough love and are going to be forgotten about and shouldn't be. And I'll make sure that he's not.
Yeah. I love that we talked about Carter Gilmore for like the last 2 years when he wasn't making threes and talking about how we love him because he's a dirty work guy. He just comes in and he works his ass off.
Yeah.
And that continued this year. And then he started making threes. Mm-hmm. And then people were like, hey, this Carter Gilmore guy is kind of fun to watch.
Yeah.
And it's like, we've been telling you for this would be the third season that we've been telling you we love Carter Gilmore because he plays with effort.
Yeah.
I would love to see Carter Gilmore potentially wearing a quarter zip for the Badgers in the future. Like, that's how highly I think of the way that he plays.
He loves the W, so I wouldn't disagree with that.
Yeah. You know, even if it's just kind of like a player assistant, like assistant of player development kind of thing. Yep. Yep. I would love to see him, you know, like I said, you know, on the second row of the bench helping out Greg Gard and staff. I agree.
Another one of those culture guys, honestly, at the end of the day, another in-state kid who you guys kind of were harping on. It just takes wearing the W seriously. It's I could spew on more, but no, just another culture guy, another in-state dude that gives a rat's ass about this program and where the direction of where it's going. So, kudos. I mean, this guy was a very versatile. He could guard 3 through 5. I think that's safe to say. He was asked to do many assignments, stuff along those lines, play the 5 spot 2 at 6'7", 6'8". That's a little difficult to do in college, but he would do the dirty work and he didn't give a shit. He would get it done, you know, one way or another. So, another big culture guy.
So I have just a few things that I want to kind of end on that are more team targeted. And my first one is just continue to innovate this, especially with the pro game in mind. This year's offense was so much more fun to watch. Mm-hmm. Not only that, it made victories a little bit more comfortable. Mm-hmm. When you can score more points, you don't have to try to win, you know, 62-56. If you can win 74-60. So continue to innovate on offense. Now, innovate defensively. We were talking before the show about some of the kind of things that we're looking for in the transfer portal, and we will do transfer portal targets. Like, this won't be the last time you hear Mike talk about basketball this season until 2025, 2026 season. We're going to have some transfer portal show talk. Mm-hmm. And I'd like to see another versatile big. Another guy, like, I like what Amos brings, and obviously we all have very high hopes for Nolan Winter for year 3, but I'd like to see a third big, another guy that can switch defensively and hit threes, a guy that can space the floor offensively, and a guy that can switch, you know, potentially 3 through 5, maybe even 1 through 5. I know that'll be hard to come by, but that's what I'd like to see, because I'd like to see the Badgers continue to innovate defensively, not just offensively, and you see them be a little bit less, you know, exploitable in certain matchups.
Mm-hmm.
And then my last thing that I want to end on is a quote by John Blackwell, who said, "I promise you, we're going to get over that hump. Me, Janicki, Nolan Winter, we already talked about it. This is going to be a hardworking summer. We'll be back for sure, for sure." Hey. So Cam Hunter did enter the transfer portal today. I have a very strong feeling he's going to be the only Badger that enters the transfer portal.
I feel pretty good with that bet too.
John Blackwell, Jack Janicki, and Nolan Winter will be back.
That's the main core going into next year.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Mike.
No, I've already got it already. The biggest challenge, it's not even going to be necessarily talent. Well, yes, it is, but again, you got to find guys that – John Tanjay fit the mold, not just with his talent, but he also just playing for the university and just fitting that freaking culture, because he second-team All-American, second-leading scorer in a season, all Badgers all-time history, but he didn't care, you know, if he wasn't the leading scorer. We got to remember, he did. There's a game where he didn't score. He scored 0 points.
USC.
And we still won by, what was it,
20,
15 points. 22? Yeah, 20 points. And he did not care. He had, you know,
didn't miss a beat. Came out and scored 25 points a game over the next four games, something like that, five games.
Exactly. So you got to, like, at the end of the day, you have to do your best. And you know what? Wisconsin's been doing a hell of a job, you know, fitting guys, bringing in guys in the portal, I think, for the most part. But it's that fine line of finding guys who give a shit about playing for your university versus, okay, what's my paycheck going to look like with this whole NIL thing, right? You got to find that right balance, I think, as we move forward. So far, it seems like Wisconsin has been on the right track with that stuff.
Yeah.
And even as you said, Tyler, in terms of the transition with, like, offensively, defensively, yes, we have another challenge ahead of us there too. But I think we're definitely heading in the right direction. You know, the type of offense we run, the type of kids that we bring in. Yes, not everybody's going to work out, but I mean, I think we went a solid 2-for-2 in the transfer portal the last couple of seasons. If we're strictly just talking about that, yeah. I know we're not in the sweet. We didn't make it to the Sweet 16. We were literally a bucket away from doing that this year. But for any Badger fans, I think that watched, you know, 30 plus of these games this year, I think you could honestly say we made a huge step in terms of, you know, offensive input. Defensively, it might not have been the best, but I think collectively, this team was super fun to watch.
I think leaving the, like, say, 2022, 2023, 2024 Badgers versus where the 2025 Badgers team is going, it has become a much, much more attractive place, especially if John Tonja ends up getting drafted by somebody.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I think you're going to see a bit more interest in Wisconsin.
Did I see he was projected second round? I think I saw his
name. Somewhere in the 50s.
50s, okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So even if he doesn't get drafted, he's going to end up probably on, like, a two-way deal.
Yeah.
But if the Badgers are potentially putting another guy in the NBA, you know, with an offensively revolutionized season, and please do not – I've tried to kind of harp on this over the entire season. Do not – get lost on how big of a deal adding Greg Steensma back to the coaching staff was. For him to have been a player development coach for, like, 6 years after having his own NBA career, I think that's going to be a huge deal for getting guys who are potentially looking to, you know, come from a smaller school and put one big season on tape like John Tonja just did, mm-hmm. or to come from, you know, a reverse AJ Storr situation where you get buried on the bench of a big team and you want to come and show out somewhere and give yourself a chance to catapult into the NBA. I think Wisconsin is going to become a school that is looked at that way.
Well, shit. I mean, even if you take into consideration just developing Johnny Davis, you know, in 2 years from where he was as a recruit to making him a top 10 pick in the NBA. I mean, that's something that people are going to think about as well. When you talk about the portal, what's next? What do the Badgers need? Well, losing John Tonja, obviously he does everything. But, you know, going into the offseason, you're hoping that Blackwell takes maybe a step or two forward. He needs to get a little bit better as a playmaker.
Yep.
Needs to get a little bit more. I think the next step for him is, one, playmaking. Two, understanding when to be aggressive and when to get your teammates involved. That's the difference between a star and a superstar in the NBA, by the way, for people who like to just throw words out all the time.
Yeah.
The superstars know, like, all right, team's struggling, get on.
Yeah.
Or this guy's starting to heat up a little bit. I'm going to keep him involved in this little two-man game here. That's the difference between a star and a superstar. Yeah. So he needs to take that next step. He could be he's the next guy that's going to get drafted. And Nolan Winter, if he adds a little bit more polish to his post game and gets a little bit stronger down on post defense, he'll also get drafted after next year. But that's a conversation for after next year, after they make the Elite Eight or something like that. They need to get a point guard, for one.
Yep.
They need to get a point guard that is a shot creator. I would get a shot-creating point guard. You can move Tonja back to the two, or not Tonja, Blackwell back to the two. And then, please, for the love of God, I need an athletic lob threat. I need that in my life. I need a Wisconsin Badgers big man that just jumps out of the gym with ridiculous hops. I need that. If even if he only gets one every two games or every three games, every third game, I bet your ass I'm screaming at the top of my lungs when my kids are sleeping because I don't give a shit. It's going to be awesome. Please give me those two things and I'll be good.
So a Khalil Iverson, but he's got to be 6'10", bare minimum.
Well, also, he likes playing basketball and being a student athlete. That might help too.
There you go.
Just say, not throwing shots, but
yeah. We'll do a transfer portal target show. You know, we'll probably all do like a top five, something like that. A lot of players are entering the transfer portal. I think we're well over 300 college basketball players have already entered the transfer portal. Again, only one from Wisconsin. And it's, I mean, by the end of the tournament, it's probably going to double.
There's going to be like 630.
There's probably on it. It's probably going to be close to that many. I think already.
And, you know, I hate the argument of people being like transfer portal is ruining college basketball and college football, and I can't keep track of where guys go. I don't care about that.
Yeah,
at college was always you cheer for a guy.
No one plans for hair loss, but through Hims, you can take the next step with confidence. Access treatments made with clinically proven ingredients like finasteride and minoxidil to stop hair loss and regrow hair in 3 to 6 months. No waiting rooms, no hoops, just ingredients with a track record of results. You shouldn't have to go out of your way to feel like yourself. Hims brings expert care straight to you with 100% online access to personalized treatments that put your goals first. For simple online access to personalized and affordable care for hair loss, ED, weight loss, and more, visit hims.com/Hail Mary. That's hims.com/Hail Mary for your free online visit. hims.com/Hail Mary. Individual results may vary. Based on studies of topical and oral minoxidil and finasteride. Prescription required. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
For 2-3 years, and then they move on.
Yeah.
Right? That's so if you have to cheer for them for 1 year, it is what it is. Who cares? Whatever. Yeah. Move on. I cheer for the W. That's what I cheer for.
Yep. Yeah. And that's the thing is, like, we're going to care about the guys who are wearing the red and white.
Yeah.
So – Mike, we'll let you go, but we'll have you back before the season starts, and then obviously we'll have you for college football as well when that kicks off in August. But thanks for being with us for this Badger basketball season. Start looking through the transfer portal, see what diamonds in the rough you can find, and we'll have you back for that transfer portal show in the next couple months here.
Hell yeah, fellas, appreciate it. It was a good year in my view. Greg Gard's not going anywhere. Sorry, viewers who are against that. I can promise you he is not going to be going anywhere in the near future at all. This was a successful season. I know this was a tough game to swallow against BYU. It really freaking was. But I think at the end of the day, I mean, changed our offense completely. Looks freaking great. Our coaching staff is awesome. You bring in a guy like Kirk Penny as well. Yep. Steemsma, as you said, Tyler. I think we've made some great additions in-house to keep this boat afloat going forward. So, I couldn't be more excited for the future. Greg Gard's going to be the guy for a while yet, unless he gets an offer from Duke to go coach or something like that.
Sorry, not going anywhere.
But, no, great year. Looking forward to next season. Looking forward to spring football now. As that scrimmage is April 19th, I believe. I might try to get down there for that. See,
I was going
to
text you. I was going to text you, man.
Yeah, as it gets closer, we'll talk. But, looking forward to that. And, yeah, I'll be looking for portal news in the meantime.
All right. Sounds good, Mike. Take care, and we'll be in touch.
Later, fellas.
Later.
All right. So another season ending. But
this one doesn't hurt like the Badgers football, though, in my opinion. So Badgers football was more annoying than it hurt. I'll say it was more annoying. It was like, you guys had some opportunities. A lot of stuff happened, but the Badger basketball was just kind of like, all right, at least they gave me some W's before that.
Yeah. And I think overall the season was much more fun to watch.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like, it's not like we're in like a full rebuild like Badger football is.
Yeah.
It was a pleasant surprise to see how different offensively they were, and it was a lot of fun to watch. So now we're on to Bucks basketball, and before we jump into it, we just want to talk really quick about Damian Lillard, who was not available for any of the three games that we're about to talk about. But Damian Lillard has a blood clot in his calf,
yep, and right, yeah.
Yeah, in his right calf. And we have to say this. There is nothing that has been reported that he's going to miss the rest of the season.
Yes.
In fact, the one update that I saw was that a league source told The Athletic that they are optimistic that he can play again this season.
Yep.
So whatever amount of time he needs, ideally, if he can be back for the playoffs, I don't feel the need to rush him back before that.
I also have to say one more thing. Life is bigger than sports. Yes. So I'm going to cuss at you. If you're a piece of shit and you're talking shit about Lillard right now, kindly go fuck yourself. I literally mean that with every fiber of my body. I don't give a shit who I piss off right now. I saw a lot of people dogging Dame after the news came out.
Which is wild.
Dude, he's literally going through a medical emergency. Like, that's an emergency. He's like, Chris Bosh,
35 years old. He's still got like another 50, 60 years to live.
Yeah.
And like, you're worried about more important basketball thing. Game. Like, dude has little children.
Yeah. And he said that. He said he has to be here for his family, his kids. Yeah. Like, and that's what matters. At the end of the day, as a human being, we can look at him as a human being, not just a mega superstar who's super talented at something that he does. He's a human being, so we should care about him like that.
I would rather have like a round or two early playoff exits for the next 3 years with Dame and Giannis than for Dame to be rushed back into a game and fucking die on the court.
Yeah, seriously. I literally think that people forgot what happened with DeMar Hamlin already. Like, that was terrifying, dude.
Yeah, it was scary.
That was like, holy shit, dude. Like, everybody was like buckled up, ready for a good game of Monday Night Football, and it was like, and it's, yeah, there's bigger things in this football game, huh? That's weird.
It's happened. It's happened in basketball games. There's literally a 30 for 30 about a guy that died on the court.
Yeah, it's insane, dude.
So get healthy, and we'll be ready for you whenever you're available.
Yep, it's still Dame Town, Milwaukee, man. I still believe, so.
And I wasn't going to do this right away. I was going to save this for a little bit. But while we're on the subject of Dame, it is way too early to be like, are Dame and Giannis like the biggest failure in NBA history? They've been together for not even two full seasons. Dame's played like three fucking playoff games in a Bucks uniform, and Dame and Giannis have played zero playoff games together.
Yeah.
There's nothing you can judge to say it's a success or a failure of putting this duo together.
Yep.
So cool it on that shit. Let's talk about the Bucks West Coast road trip. So Bucks Lakers, let's start with that one. Give me your takeaways from Bucks Lakers.
Well, getting into this one, Lakers were missing their top four scorers. So as it's felt like the Bucks have had a streak of bad luck, finally luck was a little bit on their side finally. So that was nice to see. Obviously they didn't have Doncic, LeBron, lots of big names, but it wasn't like the Bucks were completely healthy either. As we said, Dame did not play this entire week. He's going to be on definitely. We're missing Dame, a guy who is a top 75 player of all time. We're missing Bobby Portis, a guy who can give you 30. And we're missing Jericho Sims, a guy who's an ultra-versatile defender. And
our backup center right now.
Yeah, and the Bucks are super thin right now.
Yeah.
They're playing guys more minutes than they probably should be in some positions. Yep. So
we'll have that conversation when we get to Monday's game.
We will have that conversation.
Yes, we will.
The Bucks aren't completely healthy. Now, they did have their superstar. They're the one team in this game that did have their superstar, and he looked like a superstar. 28 points on 9 of 15 shooting is incredible efficiency.
Yeah.
And I'm just getting so sick and tired of people taking Giannis for granted, honestly.
Yep.
It's getting to the point now where it is kind of starting to piss me off a little bit.
He's 30. Like, we have like 5 to 7 years left of him, and he's been here for 12.
Yeah, of him doing this efficiency.
We are in the final third of his prime.
Yeah. 28 points on 15 shots is stupid. That's like, awesome. I don't think people literally comprehend that.
Yeah.
And maybe his play style to you isn't what you like. But I got to tell you, doing a spin move from the free throw line and ending it with a dunk is elite.
That's not normal.
Just because you've seen Giannis do it and Giannis does it, nobody else does that.
Yeah.
He's elite.
I'm
so sick of having this conversation.
You brought this up now. Like, I can't even get past it now.
I'm sorry. I've been thinking about it for the last couple days, dude.
He's literally putting up the same shooting numbers as prime Shaq.
Yeah.
He just doesn't do it from the block every time he touches the ball.
Yeah.
He can also dribble and pass.
Yeah.
Like, he's prime Shaq with a playmaker package.
And he shoots mid-range now.
And he shoots mid-range now.
He's incredible, dude.
Third in MVP, though.
Yeah. He's going to live third in MVP for the next 5 years, dude. I'm so serious.
It's like, oh, yeah, Giannis, you got your two. We're going to give it to other guys now.
Yeah, I mean.
We got used to you averaging 30, 12, and 6.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. But anyways, shout out to Kuzma. Had a good game.
We need to talk extensively about Kuzma. I have a big-ass chunk of my notes on Kuzma.
Yeah, people. See, I've had this conversation before. I'm going to save some of my Kuzma thoughts, but I've had this conversation before where I hate that in today's world of sports and debate, it almost feels like you have to put somebody down to lift the other guy up when you're doing comparisons.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want to do that to Middleton because I respect what he did for the Bucks.
Yep.
But I also feel like people have Middleton on this pedestal where he's still 2021 version. And I wish he was. Believe me, I wish he was. I'd be the first guy to tell you that. But the ankles, the knees, he was too banged up.
And not to mention, they're different skill sets, too.
Yeah. Kuzma was never supposed to be the number two.
He's never supposed to be a spot-up shooter. That's not his role.
Yeah, that's not what he's good at.
My thing with this game on Kuzma specifically, it's all to uplift him and to talk about the role that he's been forced into, which Doc talked about. So this game specifically, he was getting to the rim. I was really impressed.
No.
His having a running floater, having a back to the basket turned over his right shoulder and had a left-hand finish, had a drive and bumped Alex Len, a 7-foot center, bumped him off and finished a layup, drew a flagrant foul on Alex Len also by driving to the basket, and in the early fourth quarter, had a baseline spin that he threw down a big-ass dunk off of. Also hit a transition floater, got an and one off of it. All these things that he did, Doc said they only ran one play for him.
Oh, wow.
I don't remember exactly how many points he finished with. I think he had like 18, but they only ran one play specifically for him.
He had 25 and 5 on 9 of 16 shooting.
And they ran one play specifically for him.
And four of it, he was 0 for 4 from the 3-point line. So, really, he was 9 for 12.
Yeah.
For 20.
Doc said after the game, too, he's been good. I think we're screwing him up more right now, just putting so much on his plate. We had him at the 3 for a bit. It looked like he was going to start getting his groove. And with Jericho out, we've got him at the 3, the 4, maybe even the 5 at times. A little bit unfair for him, just trying to put him at different positions. But he's been great for our team overall.
Yeah, so I want people to think about that. Again, I'm not trying to put Middleton down, but Middleton's not playing the 5.
No.
And if he is, he's gonna be outmatched. I'm sorry.
He could play the small ball 4, but that's it.
Yeah, and Kuzma, he's not a 5 either. He gets outmatched at times, but in spurts, we have no other choice right now.
He's also Bobby more athletic than 2 inches taller.
Yeah. I mean, Bobby comes back pretty soon here. It sounds like Jericho Sims is gonna be back pretty soon here. And you know, If there is basketball gods out there, if Damian Lillard comes back, I think the basketball world is going to be reintroduced to the fucking Milwaukee Bucks at some point during this playoff run. I really feel that way. But talking about this game specifically, the starters were pretty good, 75 of the 118 points, but the bench was really good, especially Gary Trent Jr. He had 23 points, 3 rebounds, 3 assists, 6 of 10 overall. All of his shots came from the 3-point line. Now, I do have something to say. Kevin Porter Jr. was pretty rough in this game. 3 points, 4 rebounds, and an assist on 1 of 5. And A.J. Green, that's a guy who's been a hot topic of discussion. Again, we were first talking about this, so please like, subscribe, share the show, because we know what we're talking about. A.J. Green, 2 for 4 from behind the 3-point line, but overall, for the last month plus, he's been pretty tough. Outside of Gary Trent Jr., who was 6 of 10 from 3, the rest of the team was 5 of 25.
Yep.
That's tough, dude. Like,
Gary Trent made 6 out of our 11 threes.
He made over 50%.
Yeah.
So we need A.J. Green to get going. Now, I'm not going to say anything about Brook Lopez because he's logging a ton of minutes, and I do not expect him to have legs to shoot the 3-pointer.
I'm going
to
talk about Brook, too.
But, you know, Torian Prince, Brook Lopez, Gary Trent Jr., Kevin Porter, AJ Green. There's plenty of guys who can get hot from behind the arc. So for people just writing this season off is fucking ridiculous. We still have one of the best players in NBA on our team.
Yep.
Dirk Nowitzki won a title by himself, basically. People say that all the time. True. Why can't Giannis?
Yep.
So miss me with that bullshit. I'm going to give up the floor to you. Go ahead, buddy.
So you mentioned the three-point shooting already. The turnovers, the Bucks only had 9, which is great. They only allowed 10 points off turnovers, which is great. Conversely, looking at the Lakers, they had 27 turnovers. And the Bucks scored 29 points off turnovers.
Hell yeah, they did.
I get that they were playing against a lot of reserves, but holy shit.
Yeah.
My last thing on this game, since I already gave my Kuzma talk, is that Brooke Lopez is seriously important to this team. And I'm going to start a dialogue, and I mentioned this to you already last night, but I see there's a world where the Bucks ask Brooke Lopez to come back next season.
Yeah.
And sign him to a cheap one-year deal and pretty much say, hey, as long as you're productive, we'll take you back a year at a time.
Yeah.
Unless Miles Turner's an option. Just throwing that out there.
Why not both?
Dude, could you imagine starting Miles Turner and then having Brooke Lopez come off the bench? That'd be awesome.
That'd be insane.
That'd be lit. All right. So at one point in the second quarter, the Bucks offense got stagnant. They went to Brooke Lopez in the post.
Yep.
There was a point where he came out of the game and him and Doc are standing at the
timeline,
the podium thing, mm-hmm. but like way down on their end of it. And Brooke has drawn X's and O's with Doc Rivers. We don't talk about Brooke Lopez as, you know, a big basketball IQ guy. Obviously, we know what he does and we know what he's good at. But he's out here doing everything.
Can I interject real quick?
Yeah.
I also want to say when people talk about CEOs and bosses, they always talk about the good ones are the ones that listen and take constructive criticism. We don't give enough credit to Doc Rivers for doing that. You know, everybody's going to be like, oh, well, Doc Rivers needs the help. He did. I don't want to hear that. Okay? He's being a good coach,
yes.
taking what they're seeing because they're the ones on the floor, and he's being considerate of what they're seeing. So
Brooke Lopez has been in the NBA for, what, 15 years?
Mm-hmm.
You're going to tell me that in any job situation that you'll ever be in, you're not going to take advice of somebody just because they work below you who has 15 years of experience?
I mean,
so yeah. There's that. The last thing, and I'm going to come back to this in the Suns game, unfortunately, is when he's not in the paint defensively, we need everyone boxing out. We did the whole, after one of the Nuggets games, the people need to understand why Brook Lopez doesn't have a lot of rebounds, and it's because he's contesting shots and boxing out. There was more of this against the Suns too, where he's just tapping rebounds while boxing guys out. He does not care about his rebound total. What he cares about is boxing out and making sure that his team gets the rebound.
Yes.
So he was 4-for-8 from the field. He had 11 points. He did have 7 rebounds in this game against the Lakers, and he had 2 blocks. Mm-hmm. Now we can go to the Kings game, and I'll let you give your thoughts, but this was kind of a one-man show.
Yeah. So first of all, shout out to Taurean Prince. Happy birthday to you, my man. You had a pretty good game on your birthday. 6-9 overall, 3-for-4 from 3. He was pretty good on his birthday.
Yeah.
Shout out to Kuzma, who is really, really helping rebounding. 14 points, 14 rebounds for him. So shout out to him. Brooke Lopez, 36 minutes, 21 points. Again, this guy's going to be 37 years old in like a week here.
Yep.
This guy's putting up some big-time minutes for us right now in a time where we need it. If Brooke Lopez was out, that's the opportunity where I'd be like, the Bucks are fucked up right now.
Yeah.
But having the luxury of having Brooke Lopez, who, by the way, chose to stay in Milwaukee. He could have went to Houston.
Yep, last year.
He chose the culture in Milwaukee. So let that sit in your brain for a little bit when thinking about all the Bucks screwed. No, they still have good culture. They're still strong within.
Yep.
So it doesn't matter about all the outside noise. It's not going to crack the culture of this team. And the culture starts at the top. And on top of that culture is a Greek god. This man is unbelievable. 32, 17, and 3. Are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? The Bucks had a pretty rough first quarter. They were down 25-17 after the first. And then they were down early in the third quarter. They were down 14. And then guess who came knocking? That guy. He's that guy. That's the man. He had 22 of his 32 and 22 of the Bucks 37 in the third quarter. He was superhuman in the third quarter, dude. Like that, you don't see that very often.
Do you want me to tell you just how insane his third quarter was?
Yes, I want you to elaborate, please.
So he was 9 of 11 from the field, 4 of 5 from the free throw line. He had 8 rebounds. 2 of them were offensive that he turned into 4 second chance points. He had a steal and a block. He scored 14 points in the paint.
Damn.
He played the entire quarter, and the Bucks won the quarter by 9. Now, Giannis in the third quarter alone, this is only his third quarter numbers, would have tied DeRozan for the Kings' leading scorer. His 8 rebounds would have been second to Keon Ellis and Keegan Murray, who each had 9. And 14 points in the paint is 4 more than DeRozan and Valanciunas had for the entire game.
I just want to point out that Bucks
fans, his game totaled like most of what the Kings did as a team.
That's ridiculous. People were saying that they wanted Valanciunas on the Bucks because he was a good rebounder, and Giannis literally almost put up his rebounding numbers in one quarter, dude. That's filth.
Yeah,
that is filthy.
He did.
Holy crap, dude. So on top of that, I got to give a shout out to Kevin Porter Jr. I gave him some constructive criticism over the Lakers game, but he was absolutely balling off the bench in this one. 18 points, 3 rebounds, 6 assists, 8 of 10 from the field, 2 of 2 from downtown. So he was fantastic. AJ Green, I feel like he was competing a little bit better on defense. So I'm not going to go too hard on him on that end, but the offensive end is still rough right now. Gary Trent Jr., 11 points, 0 rebounds, 0 assists. I'm going to tell you right now, that man is out there for one reason and one reason. I'm not mad at it.
He's out there to let it fly.
When I was considering him as an option for the Bucks the last couple of years, I was like, he does one thing really good that I like, and he's going to come to Milwaukee and he's going to do that. He's been good. To my credit, he's been good. He's been making about three three-pointers per game over the last 10. I believe it was like 2.7 or whatever, but miss me with your decimals. I'm just going to say 3 anyways.
Round it up.
But he's been good, man. The bench overall was 6 three-pointers, so that's good. That's almost half. I like when the bench can produce from downtown. If they do that and the Bucks can rebound, they can play with anybody, man. So Giannis, that guy's good. That's all I'm going to say.
The team overall was 13 for 31 on threes. That's 41.9%, which is very solid. Obviously, if Dame plays, that number goes up. But Brooke Lopez was 3 for 6. Torian Prince was 3 for 4. And you mentioned Kevin Porter Jr. was 2 for 2. Kevin Porter Jr. in the Lakers and Warriors games was 2 for 9 from the field and 0 for 2 from the three-point line. So it was really good to see him bounce back offensively. And looking at the Kyle Kuzma and bench unit that they were running out there with the start of the fourth quarter. So yeah, the Kings scored first in the fourth quarter to give them a 5-point lead. The next 18 points in the next 6 minutes were scored or assisted by Kyle Kuzma, Kevin Porter Jr., and Gary Trent Jr.
I like that. The juniors.
All with Giannis on the bench.
Yeah.
The Bucks went from a 5-point deficit to a 4-point lead with Giannis on the bench with Kuzma, Kevin Porter Jr., and Gary Trent Jr. leading the charge.
Yeah.
I know I've said as goes the three-point shooting, so goes the team. But in my opinion, the bench is just as important. If with Kuzma and Torian Prince and the bench unit can win their minutes, the Bucks will be extremely difficult to beat.
Yeah.
If you can't keep, you know, if you can't build a lead or cut a deficit with Giannis on the bench, when he comes in, you're screwed.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I'm really excited if the Bucks and Pacers ends up being the 4-5. I'm thrilled. I am excited.
Me too.
The other thing with this game is the Bucks held the Kings to 47 points in the entire second half after allowing 36 alone in the second quarter. Which you love to see that. The Kings versus Kyle Kuzma were 4 for 12 and 0 for 5 from the three-point line. Versus Giannis, they were 3 for 7 from the field and 2 for 6 from the three-point line. Versus Brooke, they were 12 for 27, which is 44%, which if you're going against the center, you would assume that those are going to be closer to the basket and would want to shoot more than 44%. But the Kings, when shooting threes against Brooke Lopez, were 0 for 9.
Damn.
Talk about settling for shots.
Damn. Nice shot, Brooke.
And DeMar DeRozan against A.J. Green was 1 for 4 from the field. So A.J. Green, we still need him to get going offensively, but he's still applying himself on defense.
See, my eyes told me he was competing better on defense. I saw it.
I got you. And for the second game in a row, 9 turnovers, 10 points allowed off turnovers. So we're good there. And we can go right into the Suns game. Only 7 turnovers and 6 points off turnovers allowed to the Suns on Monday. Now, their three-point shooting was kind of rough. This is their fourth game of their five-game West Coast road trip. So 12 of 39 from three is rough. That's just shy of 31%. But Gary Trent Jr. was 4 for 8. That dude, like you said it, he's here for one reason.
That's it, Adrian dude.
Green was 0 for 4. Prince and Kevin Porter Jr. were both 1 for 5. Kuzma was 2 for 7. Now, looking at this, the first quarter stood out because the Bucks turned 6 Suns turnovers into 11 points off turnovers. They had 10 turnovers for the rest of the game and 16 more points off turnovers. But a good start for the Bucks. They only built a 5-point lead in that first quarter. I think there was some opportunity there. Giannis and Gary Trent Jr. had 19 of the 30 points.
Yeah, they did.
So I just brought up with the Kings game, as goes the bench, so goes the team. We needed the bench to step up in this one, especially with Damian Lillard out, because with no Dame, the Suns sent doubles at Giannis every single time he touched the ball.
Yep.
And there's two things that go with that. First, with Damian Lillard on the floor with the gravity that he commands, it's harder to do that. So we need other guys hitting shots so that they have to, like, consider how close they are to Giannis and not be like, shit, we can't leave Torian Prince and AJ Green open because they're just going to rain threes on us.
Yep.
Gary Trent Jr. still did that, but we need at least one other guy shooting above 40%, 50% from the three-point line just to give Giannis a little bit of space. And the second thing, guys got to hit shots. When Giannis is getting doubled, it's going to lead to open threes. We need guys knocking them down. So you and I had this conversation a little bit before the show started. If AJ Green's not knocking down those shots, there's a realm where he's out of the playoff rotation.
Yeah.
So two other things that I had on this game specifically. One, get the ball in the post. I just brought up that the Kings were 0 for 9 on threes when shooting threes against Brooke Lopez. Kevin Porter Jr., I'm sorry to single him out, but this is the example that I'm going to use, got a screen set by Brooke Lopez and got Oso Iguodaro switched on him and decided to take a step back three with Brooke Lopez being guarded by Devin Booker in the restricted circle.
Yep.
That ball's got to go to the post.
Yep.
You don't have to settle for threes because you got a bigger guy on you. You can take that shot with a smaller guy on you and have a better look at it.
You could also add in that he missed Giannis late in the game, like throwing it into the post. You've got to throw that up and just trust that 34 is going to go get it.
Yeah.
If you throw it up and it's a little bit too high or Giannis fumbles the ball, that's on Giannis at that point. But you not throwing it.
And Giannis can just go up and tip it to himself.
Yeah.
If he has to come down and go back up again, Devin Booker's not grabbing the ball from him.
Yeah, he's going to foul him.
So – ball has to go to the post. Brooke in this game, too, was 6 for 8 on twos. And he's a good free throw shooter. So even if he gets a catch and Brooke and Devin Booker follows him, I'm good with Brooke Lopez going to the free throw line. He's like an 84% free throw shooter.
He's got good touch.
So go to Brooke in the post anytime you want, but definitely do it when he's got a 6'5 guy on him.
Who's not known for defense, by the way.
And my last thing also involves Brooke. Box out. There was a possession in the third quarter where the Suns had three offensive rebounds on one possession. And then shortly after that, there was a possession where Ryan Dunn got an and one, missed his free throw, and got his own rebound and put it back in. When Brook Lopez is not in the paint, everybody else needs to box out. It's wild that four other dudes can't box out and grab rebounds when Brook Lopez isn't standing there to help them with it. That's insane to me.
I think a lot of Bucks fans are going to learn how important Brook Lopez is over the next couple weeks.
I've been trying to tell him for like, it feels like 2 years now, 3 years now.
It's getting tiring, I'll tell you.
And that's before we even get to what he does offensively and what he does to help Giannis.
Yeah.
So give me your thoughts on the Suns game, and we'll talk a couple other things yet.
So I wrote it down since you were so heavy on the bench. I wrote down, this is the fifth time I'm writing this down in this notebook, the Bucks miss Bobby.
Touche.
You could literally just add Bobby Portis to this team, and they got probably four more wins. Being so serious, dude. And now I understand that
they might be undefeated on the West Coast road trip with Bobby.
Dude, they're not losing that Suns game with Bobby in there.
And the Warriors game. Those are their
two. They're not losing the Warriors game. That's the first two that come to the front of your mind.
We could be in a position where they're 4-0 on a West Coast road trip.
And we could be in a position where they're breathing on the Knicks' necks. Knicks' necks. Try saying that five times fast.
No, thanks.
yeah, for obvious reasons. but, you know, outside of that, this is why I'm just going to say it. That's one of the reasons why I still have optimism, because Bobby is coming back. He doesn't have a season-ending injury. He is coming back. And, you know, Jericho Sims is going to be back. They believe that he is going to be back for the playoffs. So you literally just adding those two guys is just going to help immensely.
Yeah.
Now, if Dame does come back, hopefully, you know, I'm just cheering for him to be healthy. But if he does come back, I mean, the Bucks are going to be outstanding. They put together a nice roster at the deadline, in my opinion.
Yeah.
You know, if Bobby comes back, you could deal with Kevin Porter Jr. kind of having a stinker on offense, because Bobby's probably going to pick him up that day.
Yeah.
If both those guys get going.
I'm excited to see their energy together, regardless of what they do with the ball in their hands. Like, I just want to see them on the floor together.
Yeah, they're about to be a problem together. The way that they both – dog, they're about to be a problem. And, you know, if Gary Trent Jr. keeps doing what he's doing, and Bobby and Kevin Porter Jr. are both on the same day, they could beat the Celtics without Damian Lillard.
They could.
And I'm just talking about taking one game.
But it's possible.
Yeah, and I'm not talking about winning the series. I'm talking about winning a game. So if they have to win a game on the road and both those guys are going, now it's going to be tough on the road. But I could see a way where it happens. We've seen Giannis in 2022 basically destroy the Celtics by himself.
Yup.
He was a monster. Now we're going to need that guy again, but – it could happen. That's all I'm saying.
And they're giving Giannis a rest tonight. So
they are. This game specifically, Giannis versus Kevin Durant is fun.
Yeah.
It's a good matchup. Both those guys are just both incredibly talented for how tall they are. They both have different skill sets. They're both smart. They both play. Giannis plays a little bit better defense, in my opinion, at this point in his career. But they're both really good players, and they're fun to watch.
Yep.
I saw an article talking about how Kevin Durant's going to force his way to Boston. Please do, because you have to give up a lot of players to get into the second apron. Take away a lot of depth on that team. Please let that happen. I would forgive Kevin Durant for going to the Warriors if he breaks up the Celtics team. Just saying. I would. They have to get rid of Tatum.
I can't even imagine what that framework would look like.
Dude, they have to get rid of like $55 million. But anyways, it's a discussion for a different day. I want to talk about Kyle Kuzma. Okay. And I want to talk about how people are really kind of treating him unfairly. So since coming over to the Bucks, he's averaging 14 rebounds. Or 14 rebounds.
That'd be – I was going to say what?
I was reading too far ahead. 14 points, 6 rebounds, 2 assists, half a block, half a steal. He has a 110.7 offensive rating and a 110 defensive rating. Now, you're talking about a guy who is getting thrown into like seven different roles.
Yeah.
And I'm just letting you know, I was planning on saying this before you even said that Doc Rivers quote, which is perfectly fitting in what I wanted to say. Dude, he's being asked to do like three different roles right now. Yeah. If he was strictly in the role that they had envisioned for him when they traded for him, he would be balling right now.
Yeah.
Like, I'm talking like 17.
And we're still seeing the flashes of it. Like in the Lakers game, the buckets that he scored in that game, that's his ceiling.
Yeah.
Like, he's a 20 point per game ceiling.
Sure. Yeah, I agree. And then, you know, you compare him to, and everybody keeps comparing him to Chris Middleton. And Chris Middleton,
they're not similar type players at all.
They're not.
They're traded for each other. That doesn't make them the same.
And the thing that really is kind of getting under my skin is everybody talking about how, oh, if Chris was still on this team, I would have more confidence for the Bucks in the playoffs. Why?
Why?
What makes take the last three years. What about the last 3 years gives you more confidence? We've still missed. We've still been kicked out of the playoffs in the first round.
The only thing I can say is obviously Chris was really good against the Pacers. Like
he was.
He carried the Bucks by himself basically to five games. Obviously, I feel a little bit more confident in his shooting.
Right,
but that's it.
Yeah,
and passing.
I mean, he's a good playmaker, you know, and that's where kind of the argument, you know, with Dame maybe being out, that's where he could fill the void a little bit more, is just being a good passer. But, like, outside of that, dude, I mean, I don't see more upside with Middleton compared to Kuzma, especially when you think about all the things that you could do on defense with Kuzma,
yep.
You know, with switching and all that stuff. Like, there's so much more you could do with Kuzma on defense than Chris Middleton, where you get limited. But offensively, you get a little bit more variety with the playmaking. But
right.
Kuzma's been really good cutting back door, like you said, finishing at the rim. He's got the nice spin move where he goes over the left shoulder and finishes. I mean, he's been pretty fucking good on offense.
And the other thing is that he's also better for the pace.
Yes.
So I'm not going to be upset in a scenario where the Bucks now have a guy who will help push the pace and give Giannis the possibly scariest player in transition ever.
Yeah,
more opportunities to score in transition. There's just no realm of possibility where that doesn't make sense to me.
And can we stop with the goddamn AJ Johnson shit,
dude? Yeah, that's.
I mean, dumb. He was not playing these minutes in Milwaukee.
To you, why AJ Johnson is playing on the Wizards and didn't play for the Bucks? You have more problems than just some optimistic analysis.
And some fan page on X was posting some stuff saying, oh, look at he's balling because he had like 17 points or something. I'm like, dog, he is minus 15, bro. And this other guy was trying to argue with me saying like, oh, well, he's on the Wizards. I'm like, he's playing the Raptors, bro.
That's why he's in the game in the first place.
Yeah. He's playing the Raptors. He's like, well, they have Scottie Barnes and they have this guy. I'm like, bro, they literally combined for 9 for like fucking 30, bro. Like, don't even try me right now.
I'm willing to bet you that Scottie Barnes did not guard AJ Johnson at all in that game. And if he did, I bet it was less than a minute.
Yeah. So I'm just sick and tired of those conversations. Let's just enjoy the team that we have. We still have Giannis in his prime. We still have Brook Lopez balling for us. And him playing 41 minutes versus the Suns, by the way, is freaking crazy. Hats off to him for that. I wanted to mention that before we got out of here. But it's ridiculous that we keep having to have these same conversations. Let's stop. Okay. Also, the game tonight, Denver's favored by 10. Probably rightfully so.
Yeah, so obviously they're playing in Denver tonight. They play Friday against the Knicks. They play Sunday against the Hawks, and they play Tuesday against the Suns again. I was trying to find which day that game happened, but
that was I could tell you right now. I think it was Monday. It was not Monday. It was Monday. It was Monday, March 24th.
March 24th. Okay. That helps.
Yep. Yeah, I know you need the date on there. You're looking on NBA.com, right? Yeah.
I am on NBA.com, yes.
Yep.
Okay. March 24th. We have Wizards, Raptors.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Box score. Matchups. Okay. Offensive player, AJ Johnson. He was guarded by Scotty Barnes for 12 seconds. 12 seconds. He did not take any shots.
How about against Quickley?
Against Emmanuel Quickley, a minute and 41 seconds, no shots. But
that's the two people he brought up. That's literally the two people he brought up.
He was 2 for 2 against Jakob Poeltl. He was 1 for 2 against Jonathan Mogbo, two bigs.
Yep.
And he was 2 for 3 against AJ Lawson.
Who the hell is that?
Exactly. He was guarded by Jamal Shedd for almost 3 minutes, who was a clamps defender and was 0 for 0, did not take any shots.
Yep.
And he was 0 for 3 against Colin Castleton, which I don't know who that is either. He scored...
The point remains.
7 of his points came against Biggs, and 4 of his points came against AJ Lawson, who is...
Probably a two-way player, to be honest.
He's a 6'6 guard who weighs the same amount of pounds as AJ Johnson does. He's 6'6, 179.
Holy, that's skinny as hell, dude. Holy crap.
Yeah.
Yeah, so let's just stop with those conversations. Sick and tired of it. Don't want to have to explain how sports work to you every single day. So, cool.
Yeah, there's a reason why guys who were traded are playing for teams that have 15 wins.
Agreed.
Okay. So, last thing, we have a Brewer game tomorrow.
We do.
And not just a spring training game. We have a real Brewer game tomorrow. They're not playing in AmFam like there is behind us. They're playing in New York for the second season in a row, opening in New York in March where there's no roof, instead of playing in a climate-controlled retractable dome stadium. That makes all of the sense, apparently.
Right.
So that's a thing that's happening. Now, the opening day roster is going to look a little weird for the Brewers. The way the roster looks towards the middle and end of April is how it will be more finalized. But looking at the guys that are on, Connor Thomas, the Rule 5 draft pick, Elvin Rodriguez is going to be like a depth/mop-up guy. Tyler Alexander, who has a 4.55 career ERA, 5 years with Detroit and a year with Tampa Bay. He's going to be an inning eater and a spot starter. Mm-hmm. And then Chad Patrick made the opening day roster. He won the Triple Crown in AAA last year. He had a 2.90 ERA, 14 wins, and 145 Ks. Those all led AAA last season.
Cool.
So he's making the team. Also making the team, Jake Bowers and Isaac Collins. Those two are both going to be on the team to start the season. And the couple guys off the roster that are a little different than what we kind of envisioned are Jose Quintana, who accepted a demotion, quote-unquote demotion, more like a designation to AAA as he continues his ramp up, because he was kind of signed late in the spring. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Brandon Woodruff is also going to be kind of ramping up. He's going to need like another like rehab starter too. So very possible that Brandon Woodruff could be pitching in Appleton before he pitches in Milwaukee this year. But still probably mid-April for him as well. And then late April is when we should get Tobias Myers back. So the starting rotation is going to look very different on March 27th than it does on April 27th.
Yes.
So just kind of keep that in mind. It's going to be a weird 26-man opening day roster, but the roster is going to look much different a month from now.
Yes.
Last things last with the Brewers is going to be who's coming up first. Your leadoff hitter tomorrow is Jackson Gurriel.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that's he's real? Leading off tomorrow.
Holy fuck. Jackson Gurriel lead off?
Dude, I'm so excited for Brewers baseball to be back.
Oh my goodness. Gurriel's leadoff is fucking lethal, dude. I'm sorry. I
love it.
That's lethal. I love
it. Come on, get him over, get him in. Let's do it.
Pat Murphy's a fucking stud, dude. Balls of steel to put Gurriel as the fucking leadoff, dude. Seriously.
Yeah, balls of steel. I love it. Bat him leadoff.
Fuck love yeah, it. Dude. Let's go. I'm excited, dude. 2 o'clock tomorrow. I'm excited.
Yeah.
Joe Buck is better at baseball than he is at football. I will die on the hill. I don't care what anybody says.
I will stand right next to you and help you plant the flag.
He's better at baseball.
Yeah. I love him for baseball. When he's not in the booth with Troy Aikman, honestly.
Yeah. And
Taylor, I would love to be going Monday, but I don't currently have any Brewers tickets yet this year.
No, sadly, I have to do this thing where I go to this place and I have to do things and they pay me for it. So that sucks, but it is what it is.
I'll be ready to watch, though.
Me too.
But this is our last Wednesday show without Brewers analysis. So, Taylor, you're watching right now. I'll ask you, just throw this out there. We're gonna put this question out to anybody who listens to this or watches this. What kind of things do you want to hear us talk about when it comes to Brewers baseball? You know, do you want us to explain more stats? Do you want us to go through visually and point stuff out? Do you want to just hear more like the highlights? Like, you know, we want to know what people want to hear about baseball and what they want to know about baseball. So we're going to leave that question open-ended, and we'll keep that in mind. Taylor said he'll join us on the hill, that Joe Buck is better at baseball. All right. So, yeah, I mean, we want to know. We always want to make sure that we are giving the most interesting analysis that we can, and we want to make sure that we're doing it in a way that helps feel like people are getting more from watching our show. Taylor wants everything.
Don't everything. I want everything.
So we want to make sure that we're giving an entertaining show, an informational show. So we want to make sure that we're doing that. And we always want to make sure we're giving the best analysis so that people want to come and watch our show more. So anything that anybody wants to toss us for input, comment it, message it to us, comment it on Facebook, YouTube, wherever you're watching it, send it to us in messages. Let us know what you want to know about baseball, and we will help you understand it. And we got baseball to talk about next week.
All right.
Also, join us next Tuesday. Next Tuesday is our next episode of our draft series for the Packers, and we will be talking about linebackers. So we will see everybody next Tuesday and Wednesday.